And welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm your host, like every week, Shane Told. So nice to have you for a long overdue mini-series with one of the greatest punk ska bands of all time. Less Than Jake is here. We're doing it twice. 5 years I've been doing this podcast. How did I not speak to either Chris or Roger? I tried to speak with Chris like 3 years ago. We talk a little bit about that next week. But today we have Roger Lima, the bass player and lead vocalist. I mean, maybe sings less than Chris, but they both sing a lot in this band. And this is great. I mean, what a conversationalist this guy is. We had some amazing talks about, you name it. The Guns N' Roses chat, I think, is my favorite part. But either way, man, thank you so much to Chris and Roger and their publicist, Becky, for setting this up. This is sick. I can't wait for you to hear this one. And of course, make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss Chris next week. He's a podcaster, so you know he's good at this stuff. Check out his podcast too. Chris DeMakes, a podcast. He's got some big guests. Like, I think he's got Mark Hoppus on this week. So yeah, check out his podcast as well. Before we get into that, I want to remind you, you can get in touch with me very easily. You can email me. It's leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all of my email. You can add me to social media. It's at Shane Told on pretty much everything, including Twitch. That's something I'm going to be doing now. Yeah, I'm just getting into it, but it's very exciting. I think it's a great platform, especially when you're talking about podcasts. Hopefully, I'll be doing some stuff live on there. So, yes, I don't know. Search for me. It's Shane Told on Twitch. There'll be more, you know, forthcoming news about all that stuff, but I'm really excited to get started. And if you want to help out the show, you can do that by checking out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club, which is a Patreon feature. It's really good. You know, there's so much great content on there available if you've listened to this thing for 5 years and you want more. Some conversations with non-lead singers, you know, some other stuff that we just dive a little bit deeper into. And I think the biggest thing is just the amazing community of my sinners from all over the world. We're like 400 strong. We talk about everything on there every single day. And you can get Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise if you're a member. And the list goes on and on and on. And it helps me out big time. It keeps this thing free every week. Thanks to all the members of the All Access Club. The link for that, leadsingersyndrome.com/All Access. And news with me, not just the Twitch news, but yes, add me to Twitch. Find me on Twitch, add me to Twitch. Silverstein, my band, we just announced last week a really cool record, Redux 2. We're doing re-recordings and reimaginations of some of our deep cuts, some different songs, some of the fan favorites, and that's available for pre-order now. We've got some really cool vinyl bundles and everything over at SilversteinStore.com. If you're in the US, there's also a Canadian store and an Australian store and a European store as well, actually. So yeah, Google those if you live in those regions, but check out the record. I should also add, that's coming out on our own label, completely independent. So if you want to throw me and the boys in Silverstein a bone, that's a really great way to do it because, you know, we can't play any shows right now. Luckily, we had time to do the record, but it is a very difficult time if you're a musician because our main source of income is like dead last in terms of coming back. I mean, I can't think of a worse profession to be in 2020 than being a musician, especially on the touring side. So, hey, it is what it is. We're getting by. We're doing podcasts. I'm having a lot of fun. Thank you so much for listening to this. And if you're an All Access Club member, you're my hero for like straight up. That sounds cheesy, doesn't it? But you really are making a big difference in my life. Well, I guess it's time. This is a really good one. And next week with Chris is awesome as well. So make sure you're subscribed. Here is my conversation with Less Than Jake, starting with bass player vocalist Roger Lima.
Hello.
Roger, what's up, man?
What's going on, dude? How are you?
I'm really well. It's really good to talk to you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for hooking this up. This is cool.
Yeah.
I was checking out the site and got a lot of good stuff on there. It's nice to be in good company.
Yeah. No, well, you're more than welcome. I don't know about the site. I don't know if the site's any good. I haven't looked at that thing in fucking years. But no, I've been working hard on this podcast. And you know, it's I think, 3 years ago, I was supposed to have Chris on, and something happened, and now I'm having both of you guys on. So this is awesome, you know?
Excellent. Well, right on.
Yeah, man. So, yeah, it's cool. You know, I kind of just want to jump in right away and talk about the fact that you're a bass player, and this is a podcast about singing, you know? And it's really nice to see how you've taken on more of a singing role as the band's gone on. And you just released a brand new single the other day, Lie to Me, from upcoming record. And that's you. That's you singing on the first single. And I don't know if that would have happened, you know, 20 years ago.
I mean, it's a weird thing. I mean, being the bass player, quote unquote, is also a weird thing just in its own. I mean, I was never playing bass growing up. It just when I met Chris, you know, back in the day, they just wanted a bass player. And so I just started playing bass. I play bass in Less Than Jake, but I feel like more of a guitar player or something. It's weird, you know, it's a crazy thing. So I think that does lend itself to, you know, kind of the way that I can play and sing and, you know, kind of be the lead singer, even though I'm the bass player. You know, it's weird because I kind of think like a guitar player. That's weird. It's hard to explain.
No, absolutely. That's on my list of questions is literally you join the band, never played bass before. And here we are all these years later, and, you know, and you're playing bass and singing, right? It's way to take you right out of your comfort zone, you know?
Oh, no, I'm comfortable with it. It's a weird thing. Right, it just kind of happened that way as the band started going, you know, Automatic was one of the first songs that, you know, I sang the choruses on, and it was a single and all that. And then I sang All My Best Friends Are Metalheads, and that was a pretty popular song for the band. And
absolutely.
Then I sing The Science of Selling Yourself Short, which was one of the biggest singles, you know.
Yep.
And then Chris sings, you know, a lot of the Rest of My Life and She's Gonna Break Soon. He's saying plenty of stuff too that's gotten a lot of exposure. But it's kind of when you look at someone recently did a crazy a battle of the Less Than Jake song things on a fan page. And it's kind of crazy to be a lot of the songs that have kind of carried us through a lot of years that get a lot of mileage happen to be songs that I sing for whatever reason. So it's kind of weird. It's just, you know, honestly, I would love to be the rhythm guitar player in a band. I always looked up to Izzy from Guns N' Roses, right? He's just chilling back there. He's not really moving around. He just has his shades on. You know, he's a little intoxicated. He's just having a good time. He's playing riffs. He you know, no flair. He's whatever. I always thought that was cool, but it just kind of became a thing where it was dude, you should sing this. Okay, I'll sing this. Okay, you should sing this. Okay, all right. And it just has kind of grown and, you know, I feel super lucky that I get to sing. Singing is awesome. It's awesome to sing at somebody and make that connection. The energy is it's hard to describe, you know?
Yeah. I was always a kind of a Duff guy, personally. I always thought Duff was the coolest, you know? He looked he was kind of punk rock. He had the Sex Pistols thing going on, and he sang some songs, too.
He was awesome, and I agree with that, but he was a bass player. And when I was 15, 16, 17, in that time when I was a guitar player, my sister was the bass player. I didn't play bass, you know? It's hilarious.
It is. Yeah, I think Izzy was the magic of the band, to be honest, right? Once he was gone, it was never the same. I think you wrote a lot of those songs.
Absolutely. He was definitely some of the glue in there.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, we've already covered it. I think you've covered all my questions. No.
Well, I made sure to have a lot of coffee for our convo because, you know, it's been it's been like this like whole like isolation thing and like, you know, not really getting out a lot, not like chatting to people after shows and like I'm missing a lot of that people to people connection, you know. So it's a crazy time.
It is a crazy time. No, a couple things about that. When I got the schedule to talk to you and Chris, I noticed that you guys wanted to talk to me at 10 in the morning. And I was like, damn, we are getting old if we're getting up at 10. Jeez, man.
There's not enough hours in the day, dude. I get up real early. I do a lot of stuff. I have a very active 9-year-old. So, you know, it takes a lot of energy.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, that's a great question, too, is, you know, you, Les and Jake, the ultimate road dog band. You know, I mean, you talk like obviously everybody knows you have the record for most Warped Tour dates and appearances. But even beyond that, you guys have never really stopped, you know, stopped to make records. And that's about it. So how has this been? I mean, this has got to be the longest you've really ever been in one place. You know, I know you say you have a 9-year-old. How's that all just been? Has it been like kind of a change for you and, you know, relatively late in your career?
I mean, change is like a crazy understatement, man. I mean, this has been like, it's hard to explain. I didn't really fully grasp how addicted I am to that like live show energy. I haven't not been to a show, you know, until this COVID thing went down. I had not been to a show, you know, since I was like 16. You know, in every week or something. Like, it's just like a major thing. And just missing the crowd energy, I can't explain it. I was like so, like total like rug pulled out from under. I mean, there has been some upsides. You know, it's been kind of cool to be home and kind of absorb things in a different way. And you know, working on the house and these kinds of domestic things that I let a lot of those things slip, like living on the road. Ultimately, I'm just kind of waiting for my life to come back. To be honest, like I really miss everything about it. Like, I mean, that's what I do. I mean, I love writing songs. I love being in the studio. I love being involved with music. But honestly, like when someone asks me, like, what's the best thing about being in the band? It's being a performer. It's performing a show live and doing that with the guys on the stage and having the crowd there and that interaction, whether it's 200 or 2,000 or 20,000, like. Just I like performing, man. That's what I'm into.
Absolutely. That's what you're known for. I mean, 100%. You know, you bring up you love being in the studio and you've become a major studio guy over the past, you know, 5-10 years. Obviously producing the last Less Than Jake record and the new one. That's a big responsibility. I mean, it's not something that, you know, you've got this legacy of a lot of really great records and, you know, I think, was it Howard Benson, you know, produced, you know, some of your legendary records? Like, that guy's no slouch. So how is it now taking on that role and also having to take on all the other roles that you already have in the band?
It feels extremely natural. You know, back when we were starting out and we did Losing Streak and Rock View and that, I was like a sponge at that time. I was like the guy absorbing as much as I could about the engineering and like the ideas. And when we did Hello Rocky with Howard Benson, I mean, I really did like study that dude and be like, wow, like the stuff that he's coming up with. And that was one of the first records that he had ever done on Pro Tools.
Yep.
And I was, you know, I had a Pro Tool system way early on too. So a lot of that, like exploring the technology and kind of the process of working with the technology and what you can accomplish, like I just kind of always latched onto that. And then as the band started kind of like getting into more records, you know, it was like, I was like kind of doing the demos and we were kind of like pre-producing ourselves. And then it got to a point where, you know, when we were going to do GNVFLA, like the record, the parts on the record, the production on the record is exactly the same as what the demos were. Like the demos were kind of growing up.
Yeah.
And when we went to make the record, we just kind of re-recorded the demos in a way. And then it just kind of, you know, I just started buying more gear and we did those Greetings and Salutations things that came out on Fat.
Yep. Yep.
And that was kind of like the first things that I just like did myself with the band. And the TV EP is another thing that, you know, I did myself. And then the trust kind of started coming in and the sound started kind of coming in. And, you know, I always pass off my stuff to someone to do the mixing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I love the producing and the editing and the recording and the getting the performance and all that. But when it comes to like mixing, I love passing it off to someone that I trust with some fresh ears. and they could just be like, oh, okay, like they understand what I'm presenting to them in the tracks, and they can like bring it all together, you know. It's really great to work with amazing mixers, man. So I'm really lucky to do that.
Yeah, I find mixing is always the scariest part, you know, like when you have to make a concrete, like I can make a concrete decision about, okay, I like this lyric, I like this performance, you know, it sounds good. But if I have to decide on, okay, is this snare drum sound good? Like I could work on it literally forever until I know and then still not be sure.
That's exactly what happens to me. I just kind of like get so sucked in and I get so like overthinking about it and second guessing and stuff that it's like way better to give it to someone else and let them kind of be like, how's this? You know, and then you have like a fresher perspective. But really, no, it hasn't. It's not very quote unquote overwhelming, you know, to like have that role. It's just kind of like I just kind of work with all the guys separately and together in a way. Like when it's drum time, you know, Matt and I are talking about the drum fills and we're getting into the nitty gritty of what it's going to be. Is it a single kick? Is it a double kick? Is it this cymbal? Is it that cymbal? You know, we get into that. And then when it comes time to do guitars, you know, on the songs that Chris is playing on, it's like, dude, what's the strumming pattern there? How are you going to play it on the bass? How's it going to match together? We're just talking about all the specifics and the horn parts, you know, it's like, here's the horn part ideas. Okay, well, this matches. This clashes with the vocal. This note is kind of funky on this harmony. Like I dig into every little detail with everyone. And that's kind of like what being a producer is to me. It's like the attention to detail and just making sure that what's going on the tape, quote unquote, is like the right thing that feels right. That it's going to be something that you want to listen to over and over and over again. And that's kind of my philosophy on a lot of the records that I made, like the Suicide Machines record. Yeah. That came out this year, like that was just so much like very specific, like this is the vocal take, like this is the one that's the magic. I can just hear that's part, that's what the record sounds like. And it's doing that on my own band is almost easier, man, because I kind of know. I'm like, dude, I've heard Chris sing for 25 years. I know when he's a little off. I know when his enunciation is a little shitty, and I know when he fucking nails it, you know. It's like there, it's great. Go. So
yeah,
I just feel like I feel confident that like the Less Than Jake records that are coming out, especially the new record and moving forward, like these things are going to sound what I think like a Less Than Jake record is supposed to sound like. And fortunately the guys in my band all agree.
No. Yeah, dude. And that Suicide Machines record, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, I mean, that's another example of you're being trusted to present this band that hasn't put out a record in like, I don't know, probably close to 20 years.
Yeah, and it was hey, like Roger, 17 like, years.
Right, yeah, that is, that's a lot of, for some people, that could be a lot of pressure. I'm not saying it's a lot of pressure, but they're a band, fuck, like I live just outside Detroit. I know what this band means to people, you know, and has for a long time. Man, like that must have been a really, really cool experience.
Oh, it was so awesome. When I got the call, when Jay called me, I was like, dude, I think you're the man for this job. I was super floored, and I just like felt the love, and I just like, you know, it was just awesome. And you know, you heard the record, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the songs are just great, and there was like twice as many songs to choose from.
Oh, really? So it's a pretty long record as it is. It's like, is it like a 15, 16 song record?
It is. They wrote a ton of songs, which is great. So there was a great selection to pick from, and it was like done in this really like democratic way. Everyone voted. Everyone had equal votes on the songs that made the record.
Oh, wow.
And all that kind of stuff. It was great. And but it was just like, I just knew that like, I was like so relieved that I knew that since I was doing the record, that it would sound like the way it's supposed to sound. Like I just knew that someone wasn't going to fuck it up. Like I knew I would get it right. You know what I mean? Like I love the Suicide Machines, man. But they have all these different eras of their band. They have like the heavier stuff. They have the more ska stuff. They have the more pop produced stuff from that Hollywood era. And like the record had to kind of like hold all of those different hats and wear them all like, you know, equally. And I had to like feel like one thing. And I don't know. I love the record and I love those guys. And I was really lucky that I got to do that. I mean, I think they could have done that record with anyone and it would have came out good. But when I put it on, it just feels right. It feels honest and it still feels fresh. And it definitely feels and sounds like the Suicide Machines.
Yeah, it's interesting you say the thing about the equal voting in a band. And a lot of people listening to this are probably like, well, yeah, that makes sense, right? Like, but we know, like, there's some funky electoral college shit going on in most bands, you know?
Oh, yeah. There's songs that sometimes a song will come up and it's just like, no matter what, that song is going to be on there. There's no denying it. I mean, I won't name names, but there's definitely one song on the Suicide Machines record that I voted a one on a scale of 1 to 10, but it still made the record because everyone else wanted it. You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
So it's all good.
But that's actually my question is, you know, if you get signed on as producer, you know, it's kind of a difficult role when you're still having a democracy, because most of the time you hire a producer to kind of make those tough calls. And when that job, and I'm not trying to get all serious, like I can say this kind of shit because the record's awesome and you did a great job and all that, right? I would, if the record was shitty, I wouldn't say this, right? But it's true that you're hired for a job, and if you can't fully do that job, you know, that's a little bit of a scary place, because, you know, Roger Lima, that's your name, that's your career. I mean, who knows? Maybe we're never going on tour again and you're going to be producing records for the rest of your life. I'd hope not. But, you know, that's still like, that's your namesake on the back of that record, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've known the guys for a lot of years and I have a great relationship with them. And, you know, I know that they have the skills and it was, you know, like they can pull it. I mean, those guys are amazing players. So I didn't have any fears at all. I was just like, you know, once we get there, I'll be able to kind of be the captain on the ship in a way and kind of like balance out the votes and just make sure that the shit sinks and the good shit floats to the top. You know, that's all you got to do, man.
There you go.
You just squeeze. You just go in there and you squeeze. You listen to every little section and you're like, is this as good as it could be? Is there anything rubbing? And that's what I do. I just, it's like attention to detail and just that like micro examination of how music fits together. And there you go. I could talk about it for years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So
I do love it, man. I do really love it. I mean, those guys, that was an amazing record, but it was also very, very fast. We recorded it in 2 weeks. It was a power session. Yeah. And then, but like the Mass Intruder record was more like a whole month. And like, I would say way more attention to detail and way more layers and like a lot more like just like in the studio creativity and kind of spur of the moment stuff and like that kind of magic kind of thing, you know, like. That record's, so I just love it all. You know, I like the quick and dirty stuff and I like the like really in-depth, like deeply produced kind of stuff. And I just look forward to doing more of it. You know, I kind of fishing around. I'm like, I love doing some smaller local bands and doing my band Rehasher, which is almost done with a cover record here is almost done. And, you know, like smaller stuff is cool, but like having something like a Mass Intruder or a Suicide Machines or something that gets some attention like that, it's just so awesome, you know, to like have people hear it and be like, oh yeah, this sounds great.
Absolutely. You know, I didn't know that you worked. Was it the new Mass Intruder record?
I've done the last two releases.
I had no idea. I can't believe I didn't know that. That's crazy.
The Mass Intruder 3, the one that came out. Yeah, that record is great. Those guys were amazing. I love that band. And I did the EP before that as well, which was pretty fun. Pretty fun. Yeah,
right. No, they're one of my favorite bands. Like, I think I was in like fucking Spain or something where, you know, we did a fly-in show and they had this like guy driving us around. And all he did, like, this is like right when the Mask Intruder MI record came out. And
right.
I was like, this record is amazing. This is like the best pop punk record ever. And it's got this like overarching concept of a band. I was like, fuck. And they became one of my favorite bands. And I did not know you worked on the new record, which is also awesome.
Thank you, man. Yeah, they're great. I love those guys. Real creative. And again, it's like I really get along really well with Blue and the studio situation. And it's been a lot of fun. I'm really happy to have those experiences. Great guys.
Do you call him Blue? Like, is there a weird non-disclosure agreement you have to sign? Because I still don't know who the fuck those guys are.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, people don't really need to know their real names. I think
right.
That just takes away from it.
No,
but
totally.
Yeah, I'll tell you a real funny Mass Intruder story though. We were recording this one thing and there was like this one backup vocal and Green was like singing this backup vocal, right? But he didn't have his mask on and he was kind of singing it and it was just kind of coming out kind of thin and it just didn't really like, it didn't really feel like what it was supposed to feel like. And I was like, I don't know, man, I'm not really feeling it. Maybe we should act this part. And he goes, I'll be right back. And he went outside. he went outside and he went to their van and he came back in with the mask on and he was like, let's fucking do this. And it was instantly, like the right feel, the right vocal vibe for the part. Everyone was like, yes, that's what it needed. It needed the fucking mask. It was so great.
That's so, at first I thought maybe you were kidding, like telling me a bullshit story.
No, it's real.
But that's so, but you know what? I don't doubt that. That story at all, because if you know it, like when you get on stage and you're in that attire and you're, you know what I mean? You're in your element, stuff just comes out of you, right? That you didn't even know is possible.
Absolutely. Totally makes sense. Those guys definitely have like a theater aspect and they definitely play up the parts when they have the masks on. But it's like, you know, it's a back to the studio thing. And you know, this man, sometimes you just, it just comes that you just hear it on the tape. You hear the vibe. You hear the energy that was in the room and the excitement and stuff. Somehow that can kind of get captured if the spirit is right and everyone's in a good mood in the studio environment and the producer is doing a good job of keeping everybody like positive and moving. You can hear that on the tape, man.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah. Man. You know, anyway.
Big change in the band. Obviously, Vinny, you guys parted ways and you have a new drummer, Matt. The biggest aspect for me as a fan was there was always this sort of talk of Vinny being the lyricist, the guy writing the songs, the guy behind, you know, the words of the band, which to a lot of people, myself included, are important. Now, obviously, I understand how songs typically work, and Chris kind of got into it a little bit, like, you know, you guys are writing the melodies, you guys are kind of taking scraps and lyrics here and there and putting them all together. But what was it like, you know, starting, you know, a new chapter of the band where you kind of have a blank slate? Like, you know, you can write a song about anything now. Was that a good feeling? Was that tough? How was that for you? Because I know you did a lot of the lyric writing.
As far as like subject matter, you kind of mean?
Well, yeah, I kind of mean the whole thing, you know, like there's a, when somebody gives you something, and it's the same with producing, right? There's a lot of great producers that wouldn't know where to start when they write a song, you know? And when you micro-manage, it's not the right word, but when you take it from a real microbial perspective just on the lyric side, and I know it as a songwriter too, there's times when I'm like, okay, you stare at that blank Microsoft Word document on your computer and you go, well, I don't know, what the fuck do I write about? You know, that can be a challenge for some people to even get started, you know, let alone, you know, do the whole thing, from, you know, from start to finish. I don't know. Is that a challenge for you?
It's definitely a challenge, man. I mean, being a songwriter and writing music for a lot of years, I definitely got used to sort of leaning on Vinny and knowing that there would be some awesome lyrics to bring to the table.
Yeah.
And I didn't really put as much of my concentration and efforts in working on lyrics. I mean, I have my other band, but a lot of those songs are few and far between. It's kind of easier to write a few songs every couple of years, right?
Sure.
But I just, you know, knowing that this was how things were going to roll, I just sort of started opening up to some different things. I started letting myself notice different things, and I kind of like looked for inspirations that I otherwise wasn't looking for. And kind of like let phrases or concepts or ideas for songs come to me, you know, and just kind of like be open to like notice them, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
We recorded this record, Silver Linings, we recorded last November 2019.
Yep.
And I started writing for that record in January of 2019. So, and I kind of got going pretty quick there, but I did have a good amount of time to like sit on things and filter things and revise things. And, you know, again, attention to detail and going over things and making sure that like each song, like the words that are used in that song fit the vibes and the elements of that specific song, and kind of trying to like give each song its own little isolated bubble. That's like its own little world. You know, like sometimes you get into some records that I really like, but the lyrics are kind of all over the place. Like there's the same words across a bunch of songs, and a lot of songs are about sort of the same maybe theme or something.
Right.
And for me, it's kind of like lyrically, it's kind of trying to make each one kind of have all the details that make it specific and original to itself. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. No.
But it's definitely a challenge, man. I mean, and I feel like, you know, but it's like, it's also, I also had like some confidence built up because like Automatic, for example, like that was a big Lesson Jake song.
Yep.
And the song goes, I think I know it all. And then there's some more words, right? And then it says, I think I know it all. And then there's some more words, right? Well, even though that was in, well, there is.
You're right.
But what I'm saying is in 1997, you know, I think I know it all. Those were my words. And then Vinny filled in those other words and wrote the bridge and wrote the chorus and built up from that. But I was kind of like, you know, because that worked and that stuck and little other phrases like that throughout the history of the band that stuck and worked, you know, I kind of was like, no, you know, we can do this. You know, we're like smart dudes. Everyone has been writing songs on their own for years. And I felt, you know, the confidence between Chris and JR, who also, you know, contributed a lot of lyrics on this record, and Buddy and Matt to bounce things off of, like I felt pretty confident that, you know, we would come out of the other side, you know, with like feeling strong and feeling confident about singing these words and putting these words on a record. And I still definitely feel that way.
There you go. I love that. I love that response. Damn, that was honest and insightful.
But dude,
I'm
not going to say it's easy shoes to fill. And I think some people out there will be like, oh, well, this feels different and it is different. Well, yeah, it's going to be a little different, but I did like, you know, be conscious about like, okay, I'm a fan of Lesson Jake. I love the lyrics. I love how it connects to me and stuff. And I tried to be like, is this providing me with that same connection? Does it feel that way? Like Lesson Jake has to do that, right? The lyrics have to feel a certain way that connect you to the words and connect you to the meaning and the purpose and the story and stuff. And I'm serious, man. Like, you know, this was effort. I was like, yeah, this feels right to me. This feels like a Lesson Jake record lyrically, spirit, like the connection part.
Well, I've heard the record and I completely agree with you. And, you know, it's you bring up Automatic and, you know, from Losing Streak and, you know, a song like Bill, which is about Bill Stevenson, those lyrics are so Losing Streak, you know, like all the different name songs, like, you know, Jen or Johnny Quest or, you know, all like this. I was like, this fits in just like it could have in 1996 or 1997, whenever that album came out, you know.
Yeah, man.
It really did work.
It's like the Jay Frenzel kind of song where we had a song about Jay from Frenzel Rom.
Right.
Like, it's like we had, you know, like that song Mark Cruz about our friend Mark Cruz and, you know, all those kinds of songs where it kind of takes up that role in the band of that song. No one else has heard it, so I don't want to give it away. But yeah,
that's
a fun one.
I guess I'm spilling the beans a little bit, but that's kind of the point when they send me the record.
That's great. That's great.
Talking about the old days a little bit, I talked about this a little bit with Chris, but I saw you guys, I heard of you guys for the very first time. It was Warped Tour in 1997 in London, Ontario. You guys were playing on the back of a flatbed truck. And I was there, I went there with my friend. He's my best friend in the world. His name's Brian. He plays bass now for that band, A Wilhelm Scream.
Oh, right on. I know,
so,
Brian.
Yeah, he's a banging bass player. But I got to say, man, that day changed our lives entirely. You know, our first Warped Tour and like I remember seeing like the guys from Lagwagon walking around and like it was just, there was so much insane shit for like 16-year-old kid to see. But I'd never heard of your band before. Bri bought your CD, Losing Streak. We listened to it on the car ride home and that album, I think literally, I'll speak for him a little bit, changed his life, you know, like the bass playing and Automatic and the whole record and all that. He became an amazing bass player. But, you know, going back to those days and remembering it, did you kind of know at all that you were going to have this impact on people?
I really didn't. No, I don't think I knew that, man. I'm kind of like a live in the moment kind of person. And I was just, you know, I was enthralled with like the scene and like what was going on with sort of ska punk and like, you know, like that sort of movement at that time in a weird way musically, like that this stuff was popping off and I was just kind of like living it. I definitely, you know, put in all I could at the shows and like, you know, played as aggressive as I could and put in all my energy and that kind of thing. But I didn't really think about the longevity of things at that time.
You talk about that time and living in the moment and not really understanding that there were people like me and Brian, the crowd, that were going to be forming bands based on you guys and everything later. And you definitely didn't think that, hey, man, in like 20 whatever years, you're going to be doing a podcast with this guy talking about this shit. You know what I mean? Like, nobody saw all that coming. But, you know, for you guys at that time, it was a little bit different because that record was out on Capitol. You know, it was a major label. It wasn't like Johnny's backyard shitty fucking punk records put it out. There must have been a little bit more there. You know, I've heard you talk before about Capitol Records and how your mom wasn't so mad at you anymore because you had some money in your bank account. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There was a little bit of a different thing going on there. Because it's very cliche and probably honest for most bands to say, oh, we fucking started, we didn't know it was going to happen, and we just, like, rode around in the van, and then, like, one day we were really big. But, like, you guys, it was a very strange and very different career path.
Yeah, I wouldn't say, you know, like, we were shocked or whatever. I think, you know, we were scheming that we were, you know, looking to get signed, and we wanted to be on a national level. We wanted to be able to play shows in California. We wanted to, you know, open for Rancid and these bands that we looked up to at the time.
Yeah.
So we had our own ambitions of, like, you know, how we wanted to make a name for ourselves and get out there. And we just put in a lot of the work. So it was pretty gradual, you know, sort of from our perspective, but not really, man. We were doing one tour, you know, playing backyards, and then pretty soon, just 2-3 years later, then we were on tour with the Descendants. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I was kind of just like, wow, like it's happening fast, and, you know, we're in the moment, and I just felt lucky, and we were just living. I was just partying, you know, we were having a great time. So we definitely put in the work, I think, and we definitely wanted to get out there and play to a lot of people and get our music played and, like, spread our energy and all that. But yeah, I definitely never thought, you know, 20 years later, like, exactly where things would be sitting, because you never know. I mean, we always talked about, like, man, you know, like, Bad Religion still together, you know, NoFX is still together, and it'd be like, well, we can't break up until Bad Religion or NoFX breaks up. You know what I mean? It's like the idea of being like Pennywise, like a career band, you know, that was always really appealing, but it wasn't like, it didn't ever get down to, like, the details of what things would be like a decade later.
No, of course not. And that's really funny that you bring that up, because, you know, with my band, I've been quoted a few times as saying, I just want to be the Bad Religion of emo. You know, that's and we're on album 9. I think we got a long way to go to catch up with Bad Religion. But, you know, you bring up that. And at the time, like, when I think of hardcore, you know, because that was more, you know, more what we were trying to do. Like, the only band that I would have considered at that time, like, lifers, was, like, Sick of It All. And at the time we started, they'd only been a band for, like, 15 years. And if we go back to, like, 97, NoFX had been a band for, like, maybe 10 years. You know?
Right.
So, like, now we're talking about Less Than Jake being a band for almost 30 years. And I hope you have something big planned for the 30th anniversary. I'm sure you do. But
it's still a ways away.
Yeah, not really. who knows? They're already talking about booking shows for fucking late 2022 or whatever. It's like,
yeah,
it's all doom and gloom, man. But I don't know. But anyway, back to my question, though. Like, you know, just that overarching idea of like, hey, career punk bands. That was something that was, there was a few of them, but now looking back, and you guys are one of them. It's kind of mind-blowing.
It is, man. But, like, dude, it was there. Like, you know, I saw Green Day play when they were still touring in the Bookmobile. They played, like, at this record store in Gainesville for, like, 40 people. And then they played a venue that night, and there was, like, maybe 300 people there and 400 maybe. And it was just like, I was smelling it. You could smell it in the water, man. It was like, dude, this is going to go. Like,
yeah.
this scene is, you know, a band like The Offspring is going to show up and, like, pull in a mainstream thing along with this whole, you know what I mean? Like, you could smell that punk rock and that whole thing was moving at that time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we were into the ska punk thing, and like, the Boston's was a big band back, you know, for us back then.
Yeah.
And Op Ivy and stuff, and that energy and the fun factor of what a ska show like had to offer, you know, I'm not going to tell you that I'm like the biggest ska fan, but the energy is just unbeatable, you know, when you're at a show like that and 100%. Everyone's going off.
100%.
So like, we just kind of like, yeah, man, we just kind of latched on to that. That was just, it was hard to not get into that scene at the time, you know, living in Gainesville and being the kind of guys that we were.
I love it. I love it. You bring up Green Day and The Offspring. I have them on my little list of questions too, because of the time frame, you know, you guys starting out and getting signed. And that was like, that was when everyone was looking for the next Green Day. And not to say that they thought you were going to be or whatever, but it was undeniable, you know, what was happening. And for me at the time, I was like 13, I guess, when Dookie came out, and then Smash, you know, came out like the same year. Those records were life-changing for me. Before that, it was all Guns N' Roses and Metallica, and that, you know, switched me over, and that's when I learned about all the punk rock bands. And yeah, I'm glad you brought those bands up.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat, you know, and then sort of after that phase, it was like, you know, we did a tour with Blink, and it was, you know, we were like co-headlining with Blink. I think it was like 97.
Yeah.
And you could kind of, on that tour, you could kind of smell it. You were like, man, people are showing up for this band. They have like a buzz going, and you could just kind of sniff it out that it was going to take off. And it's crazy. Yeah. And we were there, you know, we were in the same, we were playing the same rooms. We were in the same arena. And it's just crazy to think about and go back and then, you know, how massive that band got. And then, you know, dude, I mean, we did a pretty good sized tour with Fall Out Boy way back in the day, right when when Take This to Your Grave came out, you know, and like they're opening for us, and like I fucking love that band. I was like, dude, these guys are incredible. Like they played so well, they had so much energy, the songs were so good. Patrick was such a fucking good singer, and it was like 4 months later they were fucking huge.
Yeah, I know.
It was insane. Like that was like, but you could again, like you could just smell it in the water that there was like, it was just like, it was going to happen, man. The sharks were coming. Like there was no denying that these bands, you know, had something that some kind of catalyst, some kind of song, something. It was just great. No. So it's cool. It's actually awesome for me, like to kind of sideline those things in a way, because, you know, we never really had that like large scale, like, oh, we got huge all of a sudden from this one song and then it tapered away. And now we're like trying to recapture that. We just kind of been on a steady up climb for a lot of years, it feels like, and as far as our shows and our fan base. And it kind of, in a weird way, like the theory of that career band thing, for me it's like the influence for my whole life has always been Iron Maiden, man. It's always been that. It's like it's like fuck the label that it's on, like that, none of that matters. It's about the show and the connection with the fans and like the integrity of the music and the imagery and all that stuff, you know? And like, Iron Maiden is my favorite band. That's my biggest influence in my lifetime as far as music goes. There's just no denying it, man. So it's like, it's like to be like a little mini Iron Maiden for me. And like, I'm like, I just want to carve out our little Less Than Jake world where we get to like go off and do awesome stuff and play our music and connect with our fans and high five. That's all I want, you know?
I love it. I love that you brought all that up, man. Dude, you're a well-spoken guy. And you, like, I love talking to you. It's happened, like, we've been on the phone for almost 40 minutes, and it's like, every time I'm thinking of something in my head, you say it. And I've done, like, 200 and something of these podcasts, and that's never happened this much, where I'm like, I, like, want to get a word in edgewise, and I'm like, I don't want to cut him off, but he's just going to say what I'm going to say anyway. So I, like, I don't even have a follow-up. I don't even have a follow-up question or statement, because you nailed it. But I do have a follow-up for that, which is, you guys never had the hit song curse, you know? And that's a real fucking thing. You on a major label, I'm sure, like, maybe you'll deny it, but I'm sure those Capitol Records people and the one after that, Warner Brothers, you know, they're always looking for a single. They're always looking for a hit. They're always looking for a radio song. And, you know, you guys were lucky that you never had one, because then what? You know, then you end up being that band that had that one hit song, and, like, your actual real fans, like, maybe they like you, but maybe they don't like you as much because everyone else knows about you guys. And that is a real thing, you know, that it's the same with my band. We never had a hit. Thank God. I'm actually happy about it.
Yeah, I hear you, man. But also, you know, in those late 90s, when we were on Capitol and doing that, we also kind of urged the label to do things in an organic way and, yeah. and support sort of the street team kind of like thinking and the DIY way of running a band. And we kind of, you know, purposely kind of stayed sort of in the indie scene in a way. We didn't really choose to like blow things up and go like super mainstream, if that makes sense. Not just with the music, but like the imagery and the videos right. and the, you know, how the record is being serviced to certain publications and all that. Like we kind of just also helped keep things that way. And,
except for the Bon Jovi tour.
Oh, dude, that was the best thing ever. You have no idea. Like nobody thought.
Yeah.
Dude,
Chris and I talked about it.
It was so awesome. Like people were like, no, Bon Jovi, we're not going to go on tour with them. They're washed up. And all these bands turned it down. And we were like, fuck yeah, we'll go on tour with Bon Jovi. And then like the record came out and they got all big again and everything. And then like, it was just us and Bon Jovi. And like other bands were calling them back. Oh, we'll take the tour now. And they're like, and their management was like, no, you know what? We're taking this Less Than Jake band that said yes before we had radio songs. So fuck you guys. It was awesome.
I love it. I know. I love it. I love that story. I wanted to get your take on it.
It's great.
So a couple more questions. I don't know if you got to go or anything, but I got a couple more questions here. The one thing you brought up earlier in the podcast is the song of The Science of Selling Yourself Short, which I think even though I remember Losing Streak, this is my favorite record by you guys, I think that song is probably my favorite Less Than Jake song. And when you guys play it live, there's like this moment, you know, like everything kind of slows down and you get to the microphone and you kind of pour your heart out. And it's always a really great moment of the show. Talk to me a little bit about that song and kind of what it means to you and the band. Obviously, it's one of your biggest songs, if not your biggest.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know, I did a whole podcast with Chris on the song. There's some insight on there.
Right.
But I will say, yeah, I don't know what it is about that song. The way that it came about, the way that the vocals sit, it's always like challenging to sing it. I can't half-ass sing that song, if that yeah. makes any sense. Yeah. Like, you know what, you know, sometimes you can like get through something, but you're not really hitting it all the way. It's, oh man, like out of all of the Less Than Jake lyrics, a lot of them, you know, for me are no-brainers to sing, or I don't have like an emotional attachment to the lyrics. I just sing them. I love them. I like what they say, but they don't hit me personally as much as other songs, maybe. But
yeah,
Science of Selling Yourself Short, though, saying those words in that melody and then thinking about what they say and then looking at myself and realizing that that's how I feel a lot of times, yeah. it's not. It gets me emo, man. That's a hard. It's a little bit emo yeah, every time.
It is. Well, maybe that's why it's my favorite. But I totally noticed that. Like I've seen you guys fuck so many times over the years, and I always notice there's a moment there, and that makes complete sense. Like there's a vibe shift,
yeah.
and it you know it comes from you, and that's yeah, why. And I gotta say I wanted too, to ask there, you about the song.
And there was I do remember too. Early on, when we first started doing the song live, because it was like written, you know, I had the song idea, the general song idea in a demo mode, and then it was kind of finished in the studio and all that stuff. But actually, when we started actually doing the song live, I think that's the only song that I ever said to Vinny. I said, hey, you know, there's going to be some days where I'm not going to be able to sing these words.
Wow.
Because it just hit me in a certain way. Like, having an off day, sometimes some of those words are hard to say. After many years and years of playing it, I can kind of like find the light and see the joy in playing it and like and sing it with the fans, and I've kind of overcome that. But when it was first a song, it was kind of like, man, this is kind of hard to say when yeah. you're not feeling that upon yourself, you know?
Yeah, no, that's some real shit. And
it's true.
It's amazing how many songs can even be emotional or can have words that for a lot of fans could be really heavy or dark or whatever. But maybe to you, that one's like, it's fine. You know, I can get through that one. And then there's other ones that for some reason, it's just this weight. And it doesn't matter how many times you sing it, you know, it's there. And I feel the pain, your pain in that song, man. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's, dude, music is real. You go see a band play. There's an energy exchange there. They're not faking it. Even if they're not great musicians or you don't know the songs, they're pouring it out up there. And you know what I mean? If you can find that, if you can like pick up on those vibes and relate to them, then that's what it's all about, man. That's like why music is a thing, man. We need it. You know, we need that. It's like another level of communication. It's fucked up.
Yeah. So true. Yeah. So I got a fan question here, and I kind of interested in this one too. The fan question says, you're from Brazil, kind of wild how I've never known that. And I've never heard you talk about it. What was your early life like, and how did you get into punk rock? That's the question.
Well, I'm Brazilian. My parents are both from Brazil. I was born in the States.
Okay.
I did go to Brazil, you know, when I was a kid, a bunch and stuff like that. And Portuguese is my first language. And I was definitely brought up like in a Brazilian sort of household, you know, kind of thing. But so let's see. Yeah, I was born in the States, and we moved around a bunch. When I was living in New Jersey, my uncle was in a band in New Jersey in the late 70s. So I was exposed to – my mom is a huge music fan in general, but I was exposed to like band practice in the basement.
Oh, cool.
When I was 8 years old.
Yeah, so it was like normal.
Completely normal thing. You know, like, oh, yeah, there's a band practicing in the basement. Oh, they're playing a show. That's like not been weird ever for me.
Wow.
So I kind of grew up with that. And I was into like, you know, like, I don't know, like AC/DC and Deep Purple and like Van Halen, rest in peace, Eddie. And like, you know, like all these kinds of like that late 70s, early 80s like stuff. And that's what I was like started growing up on. I had my own copy of Number of the Beast when I was like 10, you know.
Awesome.
So yeah, I just started with the heavier stuff, and it's really because, you know, my uncle and my mom like listened to all that a little bit of everything, and my uncle was definitely like a rocker, you know, drummer. So cool. I grew up playing drums. So yeah, I played drums when I was little, and then
there you go.
Just kept
That's music. That's typically the questions we start with when we do the podcast, but maybe I like it at the end. It's nice at the end. Yeah, I guess so. When fans comment on Instagram, come to Brazil, you're like, yes, I will. That's
fun,
my motherland.
Eu adoro os brazuca, cara. É demais tocar no Brasil. Lester Jake vai voltar no Brasil ano que vem ou ano depois.
There you go. Do you guys play down in Brazil often though? Seriously.
We've done a few tours down there, and it's a fucking madhouse down there. It's awesome. It's a good time. I love the eats. I love the hangs. I love the energy. It's crazy though. It's crazy. It's a little scary, to be honest.
Yeah. It's like we've done it quite a few times, and it's the only place I've had my passport stolen. So, I'll give the honor of that one to Brazil. But no, it is like I've been told, like I remember I was meeting up with like some Brazilian like friends I met in, it was like, I think it was Sao Paulo, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, where's the place? Can I like Uber there or like walk? Like what, you know, how do I get there? And they're like, oh no, we're like going to get you. And I'm like, no, it's like, I looked it up on my phone. I'm like, that's like 3 blocks. I'll be fine. They're like, okay, walk, but like, don't take your phone out of your pocket. Like leave your phone. And I'm like, what? Like, really? Yeah, it's fine, you know? And it was, and I did the walk. That's not when I got my passport stolen, by the way. This is a different time. But even that, I'm like, yeah, maybe I should have taken that. So yeah, it's like weird, you know? It's like you don't think of Brazil necessarily as being that different, but then when you're there, you're like, okay, yeah, it's a little different. Yeah, I'm maybe not a little out of my element here, yeah.
Yeah. I love the shows though. I love the insanity, man. It's great. It's great going down there. And to be honest with you, I'll play fucking anywhere right now. I'm just jonesing.
Big time, dude. Big time. Well, before I let you go, anything else tell the people? Anything else? I mean, you got some new, actually you have some new Rehasher songs out. People should check that out. What else?
Yeah. Yeah. A couple Rehasher songs this year came out, working on a Rehasher cover record, but I think I'm going to just like, it's pretty much done, but I think I'm going to hold off on it until like maybe January. Cause like kind of just leave the air clean for this Less Than Jake stuff. There's some Less Than Jake stuff coming up this year, man. We're going to try to do a few things to promote the record and, you know, and step into the live stream situation here. And I think fans that tune into whatever we end up doing with that. I mean, it's already planned, but yep. I just don't want to give it away.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be like, like one of our weird tours. Like we would do a weird tour and it's like the Price is Right tour, or we would do, you know what I mean? Like a theme thing. Well, the live stream is going to be no different. It's going to be less than Jake's.
Yes.
So I'm really looking forward to like just getting to play, and, you know, even though it's going to be like in a studio kind of setting, but just looking out for that, looking out for some more videos and some more fun stuff for the new songs, and really, really excited for people to hear the full record. I think that the reaction to the single has been, you know, better than I can imagine. And I know that there's so many little like gifts in this record of awesomeness that our fans are going to love. I just know it. I just know there's good stuff in there.
Well, I think
I'm super, super excited.
I think Lie to Me is a great song. I don't think it's the best song of the record. I think there's
a lot of
better songs on there. And I hope people, you know, this isn't the kind of record where like, oh, this is like the only good song, so they're going to release it as the first single. No way. This is a deep record with a lot of really good songs. Silver Linings is out December 11th, and you can pre-order that shit at Pure Noise Records. Go get the vinyl.
Fuck yeah. Thanks for calling it a deep record. That's kind of like where my brain was at. And if you look at the cover art too, it's kind of expressing that. Like it's got a general theme of like, you know, the yin and yang thing, but those themes have many, many details and shades and stuff. And that's kind of like what I feel like the record is, kind of a little deeper than maybe someone would expect.
Fuck yeah. Roger, you're awesome. Thanks for doing this, man.
Shane, you're awesome. Thank you, brother. This is awesome.
Okay. Talk soon. I'll let you know when it's up. I would fucking love to. Absolutely.
2022.
maybe 2023. Who knows? See you there, man.
All right, buddy.
Have
thanks,
a good
man.
One. Yeah. Take care, man.
You too.
Bye now. So there it is with Roger of Less Than Jake. What a conversation. I love this guy, man. This was one of my favorite conversations I've had in 5 years, honestly. Thank you for listening, and make sure that you are subscribed. Hit the button, whatever you're listening to this on, because next week we're coming at you with lead singer of Less Than Jake, Chris DeMakes, and also very good podcaster as well. Maybe I'll be on his show. Maybe look out for that as well. But hit the button. Make sure you're subscribed. You don't want to miss that. And all the other great episodes that I have coming up. Check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club as well. If you have the means, I highly recommend it. So choice. And I'm going to play you a tune. This one means a lot to Roger. And it's probably my favorite Less Than Jake song. And I'm an old school fan, man. I go back to the, you know, as we talked about, you know, the losing streak days. And still, I think this is my favorite one. So here it is, The Science of Selling Yourself Short on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week with Chris DeMakes.